Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
For the hardcore arcade gamer, Tekken 3 is the king of beat-em-ups, boasting a depth of gameplay that's made it a hit not just here, but in arcades all over the planet. For today's challenge, we've assembled the greatest Tekken 3 players in the world to decide once and for all who is King Tekken.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Daslow, and with me, as always,
Ben Vanel here, ready to anoint.
Oh, at the announcement of an anointing.
Yeah, that's right. An announcement.
The game of the year already. Adam Knox is here with us. And he's also played this game.
But I'm not and I tried to say announced.
Thank you so much for making me look less stupid.
Game of the year, Porky Pig Simulator.
But I was doing the supportive Porky.
Yeah, yeah.
Porky's
see, we're
too.
All Porky.
Everyone take your pants off. It's fine. That's what Donald Duck's doing.
Yeah.
He ain't wearing pants because Porky's. Anyway.
I was doing a Donald Duck impression of my dog the other day and he flipped out.
I really?
He did
so,
not like hearing the... Hang on.
It's a pretty good impression. What's his problem?
I think it was also the fact that it was kind of tied into me finding a Donald Duck dog costume on the internet and saying to him, I'm going to buy this for you. Look, you'll be Donald Duck. And then going... So I think it was the combination of the sound scaring him and also the glimpse of his future and how fucking stupid he'll look in the park. But he's white. He's already...
He'd be a good Donald. He could pull it off.
He's basically only missing the beak.
Yeah, and that can be fixed.
Yeah. And the little sailor's hat.
Little Velcro hat, little beak.
Yeah, his bottom half is already in costume.
Exactly.
Don't dress him up, though.
Why? Hey, if you get a dog and you can resist the urge to not dress them up, then I'll give you a beautiful crown. I'll dress you up.
And I would deserve it.
When they're rolling around on the ground frantically trying to get it off, it means they like it.
Yeah. His ears are back because he's like, I want everyone to know how sleek I feel.
I've
in
never
this
seen
costume.
A dog cry tears before. But fucking hell.
Start bringing in costumes here for you two.
Okay.
I do think of you as my pets.
You're the only one who's worn a costume in here. You wore that Link costume.
I did.
Which is a very short lived thing of like, Zelda's out and we're on camera now. I'll dress up as Link.
Yeah. I know. I've been thinking of doing it again for something, but I haven't quite had the right combo of costume and game.
I was definitely considering dressing up as Ichiban today.
Yeah. You weren't there, but me and Knox met an Ichiban at PAX. There was a guy who had like the full costume. He had the wig and fuck, he looked good.
Yeah, I got an itchy bun. I didn't have a shower this morning. But,
fantastic.
Very nice.
Speaking of... the email I want to read.
Oh, okay.
Well, last week we talked about Pal World.
Yes.
Fake Pokemon.
Yeah. Apparently, we had the wrong take, according to some of our commenters.
In what direction?
I don't know.
Because I think we said every different opinion.
I think we said we enjoyed playing it, but it's morally bankrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. I'm happy to have the wrong take. I'm a bad till counter. The email that we received,
yes.
I will let you know partway through the email the name of the person who sent it.
Okay.
Because last week we were talking about it in general and saying some of the names of Pokemon, of the pals. Mm-hmm. Afternoon, boys, reads the email we received.
Okay.
I was listening to this week's podcast and enjoying very much your thoughts on the Pokemon ripoff when, unexpectedly, I got the biggest ego check I think I've ever received. Apparently, there is a pal in the game whose name, as I remember Ben saying it, was the worst name he had ever heard, that's in quotes, with Adam following up and calling it Kremens. This email is sent by, the way, by... James Kremens.
Oh, Jimmy.
All well and good. Except that's my fucking last name. Then after I looked into it, that's not even its name. It's Kremis. How the fuck did I catch a stray like that and end up with a name worse than the Pokemon Eevee ripoff? Anyway, I'm proud to...
Catching a stray. That's the aim of the game,
the whole
brother.
Premise. The whole premise.
I'm proud to be the fan with the worst last name, and I challenge anyone to try and usurp me of that title. Regards, James Cremins.
Oh. Yeah. That's a crazy confluence of events.
That is insane.
It's very funny to me that...
you know what? That's the simulation having a bit of fun with us, isn't it? Just throwing us a little bone.
It's not even the worst pal name in there. The worst one is Smith. What a shit fucking name for a Pokemon.
Oh, God.
Can't tell if that's a bit or not, honestly. Would not surprise me if one of those little fucks was just called Smith. But, it is a... we don't need to go over this again. We talked about it at length last week. It is a blatant Tsujimon ripoff, Power World. And weirdly enough, it's also caught the attention of the Pokemon company.
Yeah.
Don't know what it really has to do with them.
I honestly think it's just, like, they sent out a press release thing.
Statement on their website in Japanese and then translated into English directly underneath, so you know that they mean business.
But it really is just the scale of it. Like, it was a very blanket, like, we know, and if anything is ever infringing on our intellectual property, we'll do something about it.
Yeah,
but it wasn't saying that they will about this or that anything about this in particular is. It's just that this blew up to such a degree and people were actually asking them so much about
it. Right, and everyone's thing is like, what are they going to... Because it's funny, because like Nintendo being so litigious, people immediately go to them like, oh, they're going to shut this down. But like, it's easy to forget that it's actually... It is them that puts the games out, but it's its whole own other company that is obviously not going to want their copyright infringed upon.
But, it seems as though... Either it takes forever to actually prove that stuff, or there just isn't anything that they can't that is legally triggering them to do something.
Would the stuff that people found in the like data mining of how the models like line up exactly? I would all imagine that's the best bet that you have of being able to take action.
And shit's been so back and forth about whether it's legitimate. All of the chat about it is extremely speculative and. Perhaps in bad faith from some people is what I have seen.
I think if I was a Pokemon company, I would sue them just to like get some kind of precedent of like,
right,
this is it feels egregious.
Well,
maybe it's not, and we'll get that down in law. But
I'm not a lawyer either.
Wait,
to my detriment from the amount of times I've said I'm representing myself, Your Honor. But if you do that and then it isn't, then do you set yourself up in the other direction where people can prove, cool, we can make a Kremins and get away with it?
Well, who would ever want to make a Kremins?
that was, from what I saw, people who knew about it saying a very just like, you know, it's generally the opposite of social media stuff where somebody goes, everyone's been asking me where I got my shoes. Like, no one asked you. You just are doing a branding deal. This was actually like... Shut up.
We
know. I wonder how much it plays into as well, like the Pokemon company, like the whole IP, it's all very kind vibe. Like if you all of a sudden are engaged in this like big lawsuit where you're like suing a competitor.
And like we spoke about last week and you pointed out, Tommy, like these have been being made for 30 years.
Yeah.
And they've not done this. They've not done anything about it until now. So
yeah, I think the thing that would make them do it would be the art direction and the fact that you can argue, like if you can argue that someone could mistake these designs for their own legitimate ones, would maybe be the platform that you would argue it on. But I who knows if it's even worth their while, like what they get. And you're right, the risk of like that they lose and then just every fuckhead on the planet goes, here we go.
If you're protecting your IP, like, again, not a lawyer, but there's probably heaps of books about it.
Yeah.
And I haven't read them, and I imagine that they say a lot of stuff about what to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my take.
Interesting.
Try saying that's the wrong take.
Because, I mean, they've stood the test of time. You know, like, they've been around for, 30 years or something.
Yeah.
They've had all these competitors that have, imitations that have never quite gotten to the same scale.
Mm.
They maybe just are banking on it being a bit of a flash in the pan or whatever.
Yeah, it could be.
It could
rip them off. I mean, that would be great if the next Pokemon they have guns And then yeah. Power World sues them.
And they put in Kremis.
They put in Kremens.
Yeah.
It's not Kremis. It's not Kremis.
They put in Kremens and then we sue them.
Oh, or James sues them.
Yeah.
And we represent him.
we sue them and Kremens is our star witness.
Yes. Yeah.
We bring him in one of those things where he's straight jacketed up and he's got the thing across his mouth.
It's like it's... He's not like a criminal helping you. There's no...
He's a criminal. Both of us trying to take the turn at the same time.
I want to get in quickly. I want to plug my new podcast I'm doing with Rosie, my sister. Yeah. It's a Survivor podcast. We're doing it once a week and we're recapping all the episodes and talking shit. People have already started emailing in, which is nice. There's a lot to go through. It's called
Who's
Tribe
emailed
Check.
In? Jeff Probst? With a cease and desist?
James Kremens. I did the same thing on that show.
There's a survivor called Kremens. I wonder if he'd have sent the email knowing that we'd say his name so much. I did ask him if we could.
Yeah, what it's if great he turned promo up, for Kremens.
Yeah. What if this was the start of him being like in a Being John Malkovich scenario where all of a sudden his name's just popping up in everything?
Oh,
he's watching
yes.
like a Law and Order and the criminal's name is Kremens. Starts to think he's going insane.
Let's start planting Kremenses. But yeah, it's called Tribe Check. We do a vibe check on the tribes. And while I've been watching Survivor, there is something video games related. Mm. I've been seeing a shit ton of ads for Halo, the Paramount Plus series.
Sure. Right.
New season coming soon. And like, I'm not really listening to the dialogue. It's a very action-heavy trailer. Mm. It looks fucking cool. Like,
right.
I feel like if this had come out, and obviously, I guess like CGI was pretty advanced back in like Lord of the Rings time, it would be almost possible. I feel like I would have loved this if I was 14.
Weta Workshop was working on a Halo movie for a while.
Yes.
In like the 2000s or something.
Yeah, with Neil Blomkamp. That's right.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I like had not heard anything about season one and in my head I view that as an indication of its quality. But then I think that's just more down to the fact that it's a Paramount Plus show.
Yeah.
And The Curse is great.
Yeah.
They have like three great people in it that people love and they have done fuck all to promo that show.
Yes.
It's very funny, some of the stuff. I haven't watched that show because like and a lot of people who like Halo feel this way about the show that they just went off and made their own thing that was sort of using Halo stuff but didn't line up with what's good about Halo or like respect that stuff in a way where like immediately it's like Master Chief's taking his helmet off, fucks in episode 4, stuff like that where it's like he is canonically a virgin and should remain that way. It is a key part of my enjoyment.
Right, that's it. That makes sense because yeah, like I said, it was basically just visuals and explosions and was like, oh, it looks cool.
I've seen people say that like the second season is maybe better, but I don't know. But there was a very funny quote from I think that lead actor, maybe the director, where it's like something along the lines of, well, if you don't enjoy the show, then I guess it's not for you.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. I suppose
so. Hard to argue with that. Yeah,
that is factually correct.
I saw a meme during the week that said, do you sleep in the Master Chief death pose? And it's like kind of full on your front, arm out.
The leg up.
And I was like, yeah, I do. Maybe this show is for me.
I sleep
in the like in the Bethesda game death pose, like on my knees, back twisted.
Ragdoll style.
One arm through the bed.
No, you got to go Spider-Man mode, kind of like gripping to the bed for dear life.
On the wall.
Sprawled out.
I genuinely sleep a little Dracula mode pretty often.
Oh, like arms crossed over.
I used to
up all night, baby.
I used to date someone who did that and it was really off-putting because I'm a side sleeper and I was like, well, I can't like hug you like that. It feels really creepy.
Interesting. I wonder why they were doing it.
Lauren's a pillow sleeper, so she
me too.
So she hugs a pillow.
Yeah.
And Ben, you and I are going to be in Japan soon. So guess what? I'm bringing her back as a gift.
Oh,
I've been joking about this
for
our relationship. And I'm rapt to finally be able to put it into action.
Yes.
Find the most egregious body pillow I can.
All right.
Probably be purchasing this on the final day of the holiday because I do not want to be carting it around the country with me.
Yep.
And bring it back.
Semi-nude anime boy. Let's do it.
Yeah,
and I'll
also
be bringing one back as a gift for someone else.
As a gift for my other pillow that I already have at home.
Hatsune Miku gets lonely during the day.
Exactly, you need two to play together.
What else is going on in the state of... Oh, we should say there's a state of play that will have been on by the time people hear this.
Yes. Yeah.
It's at 9 a.m. tomorrow Australia time.
Yes. Like about 12 hours, 11 hours before we release the pod.
Yeah, we'll be doing probably a couple of like Lethal Company videos, which have been going up on our YouTube tomorrow around that time.
Yep.
So if there's stuff that is something we desperately want to talk about before next week's show, we'll chop in here. Something about it. I need to actually not do it there because you won't understand. I'll just come back and say something about it.
Exactly.
I don't want to remember why. But if there's something really cool that we want to talk about right then, you'll be hearing it soon. If not, you'll know that we are like, okay, and you'll hear about it.
That can wait till next
week. Yeah.
It's not
World War III breaking out or something. We have to jump on the fucking, you know,
well,
telegraph.
Now we might have to double edit this episode.
We did have to edit out the Trump stuff the year he got elected because we jokingly predicted it.
Yeah, imagine. Nox, are you crossing your fingers for any VR2 announcements?
No. I expect there'll be one more game ever that I'll be interested in on that thing.
Fuck.
And that'll be it. Yeah. I would love it, to be clear, but I just am resigned to the fact that they, for some reason, don't give a fuck.
No mention of it in this state of play, that's insane.
Yes. That's got to be some kind of knell. If not a death one, then a...
Because it's coming up on, is it about a year? Was it like February last year that it came out?
Wow. And how many things on it that are like worthwhile?
Like four.
Okay.
Three of which are regular games that have a VR mode attached. Right.
I guess for a normal person, four games in 12 months is pretty normal.
I suppose.
But they're not like long. Oh, I guess some of them are real
I'm
games.
Thinking of Resident Evil 8 and 4 and Gran Turismo 7 and Horizon. But then there's also like Humanity had a VR mode and there's a few other things on there, but like nothing.
It is a shame that a lot of it is like, a VR, like a kind of cool novelty mode of a game that you can already play without it. There are very few people willing to put the money into a full-on VR-only experience.
There's no...
Not enough people have the headset.
What they used to call them for some reason, you don't see people say anymore, killer app for it.
Yeah. Oh, the killer apps.
It's
killer
gone. App. The Halo killer.
Yeah.
The killer app. Haze is the Halo killer.
Well, bloody with AI, the killer app, it'll be killing us.
Oh, shit, dude. Whoa. I love that sort of insight.
I heard this thing about... someone was talking about... Oh, it was on another podcast. It was on this podcast called Behind the Bastards, and it's they did an episode about AI, and the guy, the host, was at CES recently, and he saw this presentation from some fucking big-ass company who have made this device.
Yeah.
It was, I think, one of the AI ones, like OpenAI?
Yeah.
Adam's thought of something to say that's funny.
No, it's just funny the like when we do on the podcast the same stuff of like eight beers in at a pub. Like, I don't know, some podcast. I don't fucking remember. Anyway, AI's after us, man.
I don't remember the specifics of the company, but I remember. So what they're making, and it's fucking insane. They're making an AI piece of tech. It's slightly bigger than a big smartphone. And it is basically a portable... but very, very advanced Alexa or Google Assistant.
Oh, I've seen this. The Rabbit.
Yes, the Rabbit.
That's Teenage Engineering.
Teenage Engineering who make the Playdate and shit.
Right, they're doing the hardware,
Little thing of it, it looks sick. And I was looking at it being like, oh, man, this looks so cool. And then I was like, you have absolutely no use for this whatsoever.
Well, yeah. It's intended purpose.
It's an AI assistant.
It's an AI assistant that is connected to all of your accounts, your bank, but also like every app you use or your entertainment and shit.
Yeah.
Your like if you have a planning app or a reminders app, it buys you groceries for you. It orders dinner for you if you go like, hey Rabbit, I want a pizza, you know, and it orders you a pizza and it chooses one, and it just feels bizarre.
It looks interface of it is really cool too. It's got a little. It's very like. It's funny how much like the people designing these things now are influenced by what the version of them was in like a 1980s sci-fi film where they were imagining the future, kind of like how the mafia didn't really exist in the way that it is in The Godfather, but then all those guys just like started acting like that because they were like, this is cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is like an implementation of the same stuff that AI is doing now, but just in like a, hey, we've got like a marketable product that's a sidekick thing.
Yeah.
But my impression of that, seeing some things about it, isn't that it's like some advancement. It's just a
like an aggregate of stuff.
But I
and then it's got like cameras and shit on it.
Yeah, I think the specific software in it, it does like, it's more, the big thing of it is it's like more adaptive. Like it, it learns in like a different way to what the other stuff out there does.
Yeah.
As I understand it. Like,
well, all of that stuff like Cortana and shit is very basic. Like it is the next version of AI.
We're still super early adopter stage with all of that stuff too. Oh, yeah. Where like, same as the Vision Pro, the Apple thing that just came out recently, and like, you know, Netflix and shit are like, we're not going to bother to make an app. There's no YouTube app. There's no Spotify because it's not there yet, and it is like the final form of interacting with computers in a way where, like, if you can talk to them and be surrounded by holograms, what else do you, you know, that's, I guess, the end point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We have a Google Home, and the only thing we use it for is putting on talkback radio for the dog when we leave the house. And, like, I'll use Siri in the car. And I'll go call mum, and it'll go, who's that? It's like, oh, well, this is.
That's the thing.
I'm not getting this fucking AI thing.
All of that stuff is just not at the point where it's more convenient than the other interfaces.
Yes.
Yeah. But it is more invasive of your privacy.
Kind of, but that's gone already. Like, we're past the point, in my opinion, of having the luxury of fighting against that sort of thing in a way, because we already gave that over when years ago.
What I hate is the sort of that adaptive, like almost algorithmic nature of it, where, because I hate that Netflix, and it's such a fucking boomer thing of like, I hate that it just gives me a certain selection based on stuff I've watched. Yeah. Like, I want everything. I want you to have the genre, and I want every film in that. You know, I just want that stuff. I don't want to have to go, what do you think I want?
And there are functions with them where it'll, like, try to guess when you want an alarm set and shit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's never right.
Yes.
Going onto someone else's profile on Netflix, and it's like, this is like a completely different streaming service.
Right.
Like, it's all just different stuff based on what they've watched.
Yeah.
Hentai? I was in the living room the other day near the Google Home with my dog, and I was cuddling him and I was saying, like,
you're cuddling the Google Home?
I was cuddling Cupie, okay. And I was going wah, wah,
wah. He's wriggling trying to get out,
acting very much like Donald, ironically. I was just like talking to him, being like, Cupie, I love you so much. And then the Google Home goes, well, I'm flattered, but I'm a machine and I'm incapable of it went into this whole spiel of like something that's programmed in there.
Funny
for
little
if someone
joke.
Goes like, oh, like, I'm like, oh no, I wasn't. Oh, this is awkward. I actually wasn't talking to you.
I was waving to the person
dog.
Behind you.
Yeah. Oh, that stuff's all not yet there, but it will be.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway,
you'll end up loving it.
Oh, wait, just before we move off Ben's tech talk.
Okay.
You'll see that Elon Musk Neuralink got put into a human being.
Yeah.
That's scary. Although I hope that it works.
They've had implants in people's brains and shit for years and years too, like in certain ways. So like, this is his company doing it for the first time.
But I think he's like, he has that sci-fi goal of like, soon at some point, you know, we'll be able to replace dead neurons and people will be able to regain the use of their limbs and stuff like that. And also,
I'll be the guy that did it.
Yeah.
And everyone will love me, just like when I rescued those Thai boys from that cave.
Yeah. Grimes will be back.
But like, I mean, I have the dream of being uploaded into a computer. And so I do hope that Neuralink works. And
I want to be uploaded into what a computer was going to be in the 70s. I don't know about the modern. But look.
You want to be uploaded into something that's the size of a room. You want to be able to stretch out in there.
Yeah. I want to be like one of those, like,
I want to be on a microwave
slightly thing. Green screens where my face is spelled out in like ASCII characters.
Oh yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Hello there.
And eventually you go crazy and start
I've got the nuclear codes, etc.
I want to be uploaded into the Super Mario 64 title screen. I want my face to just be kind of floating around and people can kind of grab me and stretch me out.
Okay.
So, well, that can happen.
Yeah, exactly. Set up a little booth at a market.
The cyberpunk future that may be coming will not be coming in the form of a new Deus Ex game anytime soon, it seems like, because there was one in development. And
for a couple years.
For a little while.
Yeah.
The last one, which is like 8 years ago now, ended on kind of a cliffhangery note.
Was that Mankind Divided?
Mankind Divided. Right. An Embracer group who bought up a ton of developers and shit has shut that down and canned a bunch of stuff, and like there have been thousands and thousands of layoffs already this year. We've talked about the layoffs last year, but like Microsoft just put 1,900 people, something like that,
yeah,
out of their gaming division out of jobs, including, I believe this is true, everyone who was working in retail game capacities.
Yes. Oh. Physical, digital, a physical disc. Yeah. Production, yeah.
All of that sort of stuff. And yeah, like a bunch of Walmarts and shit in the US have stopped stocking, I think, Xbox games in particular, but possibly that stuff. Because
their plan is to go fully digital.
Fully digital.
I suppose so. And,
well,
and
that was they
service-based.
Announced the Hellblade 2. They were like, this is going to be digital only.
Right.
Alan Wake 2 was digital only. And a bunch of indie games have been digital only for years and years.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the reverse. It's the launch on digital. And then if you're popular enough, in swoops, limited run games.
Yes. the Microsoft's plan is obviously to be service only. But yeah, it sucks that so many people are losing their jobs as a result of the shifting stuff across so many industries. But like in the industry that we're talking about in particular, and, you know, hope all those people land on their feet.
Mm.
But the Microsoft's service-based thing too, over the last week or two, there were a bunch of things that came out about particular plans of theirs, like rumors of them wanting to be on other platforms more, and them getting out of the hardware business in particular,
right?
Which seemed to have some fire underneath the smoke.
Mm.
That their long term plans do not involve hardware, or that it's not hardware based. They may still keep producing Xboxes, but that they are broadening in the way that they have been moving towards the direction of years now, of like Xbox means the service.
Yes.
Yeah, they're probably the most forward thinking in terms of the cloud stuff as well. Like, if you can sign up to Game Pass and not even own a PC or an Xbox and just play it on your phone or your tablet, if that's, you know, if that's really what you want to do.
Mm.
So yeah, for them, yeah, the goal of not having to spend the overheads on manufacturing this stuff and the you know, the hassle that it seems to be if you're you know, if you're gearing up for a new console launch, you just get to, your games can just be as powerful as the server that they're on.
I mean, Microsoft is a software company, like, you know, originally, like, I guess, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
They've always done, like, a bit of both or whatever, I suppose, for a long time they have, but exactly. This is the business model that every tech thing is moving towards, which is you don't own anything. You always have a subscription for everything. Fucking cars have subscriptions and shit like that now. Like, it's going to be everything. But it could potentially mean some cool stuff, but it is also just slightly that type of depressing turmoil that where, again, all these people losing their jobs, which is a broader thing than just video games, but that it's part of the same shifting tides that freak me out.
Yep, I agree.
And yeah, upload my brain to something, I guess.
Yeah.
Or delete it.
Well, once you can't pay your subscription fee, then...
Oh my God. Cost of living is the fucking term that people say. And that's all that is. It's subscription to the right
alive.
To live.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, grab a Molotov cocktail.
Yeah.
Have one for me. Glug, glug, glug. Standing on the front line but drinking the Molotov cocktails. Everyone furious at me. Sorry, guys.
Oh, God. It's all too much, isn't it? Hey, Alexa, download the beta for Suicide Squad. Well, just to take my mind off all this.
You can't jokingly say the activation codes. It's crazy how much you can fuck with people through the medium of audio.
Oh, yeah.
That's the new George Carlin 10 things you can't say on TV. Yeah. And it's just like, hey, Google. People's toasters freaking out.
You especially can't use the word that you said before, squad, right after it. Yeah, Suicide Squad had a bunch of shit this week too. It's very fun. Review codes are not going out to people.
No,
really.
Always a good sign.
Yeah.
Or review codes are not going out, or the embargo lifting 1 minute before time of release.
Yeah. That can be back or forth. That can be either.
That can be like, we don't care, like, we don't need the... Yeah, you know, Nintendo generally tend to just go like, yeah, it's the day of, who cares? People are buying this one way or the other.
They specifically seem to, in the US or whatever, at least, I guess, like, not want to give them to IGN because of IGN's very negative coverage about preview stuff. But then the early access version of the game has been out for a bit, or like the, you know, buy the whatever version and you get 3 days,
right?
Which has been taken offline twice.
Yeah,
because
I saw
of
that.
Like,
The servers were down, right?
Fucked up bugs that they had to fix and take the whole thing down.
Jeez.
Like, so not even just the servers crashing, them deliberately taking it off.
Oh.
And yeah, that game does not seem...
Which, yeah, you've stung people an extra $50 to play it early.
Yeah.
And then you're not letting them.
They'll that do some bullshit. Shit-ass make good with a bunch of their dumb currency or whatever. Right.
Oh, yeah,
game.
You get a free
a bunch
fucking
of fucking Batgirl costumes. Yeah.
You can dress the shark up as Donald Duck.
Yeah. Not positive, the early reports of that game, too. Like, it's a sort of 9-10 hour thing.
Right.
That then they will try to bloat up to the... to keep you coming back.
Yeah.
I can't wait till in... When's it out? Is it this week?
Friday, I think.
Friday. Mm. I can't wait till in 1 week's time when everyone's already forgotten about it and we never have to think about or talk about this game
again. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to...
Literally
play that
after
one.
It's out and people have had their little 24-hour experiment with it out of curiosity.
Mm.
I think that's good. We're just... After a fortnight, we just won't be hearing about this game.
I think it'll stick around... As a benchmark for don't do this again,
sure,
type stuff. Like,
which it's like, that happened with the Avengers.
Yeah.
there's an example of this failing.
And you've got like a similar thing there where it was Crystal Dynamics, who, you know, the Kremen's Tomb Raider Dynamics. Games were well received, similar to those previous Batman games that Rocksteady did, and Rocksteady is now a different company, sort of.
Mm.
But yeah, shame, but also there's heaps of good games.
Yeah.
So,
oh, are there now?
It sucks for the people who are having to work on that and not have it pan out and probably end up getting fucked over like a ton of people in the industry have. But it's such a grim fucking thing for, you know, creative industries to be in such a shitty spot.
Yeah.
When something comes out that just seems so kind of... callously made and just bungled in every
cynical.
Way.
Mm.
Yeah, and you sort of, you look at it from the outside and you go, what are these pricks doing? They've really made a meal of this. But then, yeah, the people turning up to that office every day, the majority of them are like passionate, hardworking, talented artists who want to make something good and got into the industry because they've got like a flair for creativity.
That's virtually everyone in it too, who's not, the actual people responsible for fucking it up from the outside.
This is another one that'll make a fascinating chapter one day in Jason Schreier's next opus.
Yes, yes.
I saw someone on Twitter who worked on it sort of saying, like, and this is cool, the game's like 45 gigabytes or something, which is low for these days.
Yeah.
Mm. They were like, we worked real hard on getting it down to that sort of
stuff. Yeah, right, interesting.
And that is like notably small for a modern like AAA kind of game. So yeah, people have done good work.
And I think original Rocksteady people have gone off and started their own company.
Yeah, there's a bunch of to-ing and fro-ing going on. Like I say, the water out there is chopping and churning.
Mm.
And we're...
we're hanging 10.
Flopping back and forth, yeah. Do you know? Do you want to hear a cool fact I learned about water?
No.
Okay. Oh,
no.
No, okay.
It's not directly water.
Now I'm in.
Name a surfer.
Name a surfer?
Kelly Slater.
He's responsible for Jack Johnson learning to play the guitar.
Because
he dared Jack Johnson to take a wave that was too big for him.
Huh?
Jack Johnson broke his leg and that's why he started playing guitar because he couldn't surf for a while.
Ah.
That's who to blame then.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a fun fact about water, the way I framed it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's water that it's ultimately
it's
water's fault.
Speaking of water, heck of a lot of it surrounding Hawaii.
Mm.
And Hawaii is the location predominantly of the new game, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth.
Yeah.
Yakuza 8.
Yep.
Like a Dragon 2.
/ 13 or
Infinite
whatever.
Infinite Wealth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
Ria... Ryu?
Ryaga Gotoku, I think. Studio.
Like a Dragon.
Wait, what did I say to you the other week? Ryuga Gotoku Studio. More like Ryuga Let's Fucking Go Studio. It's better in text.
Cool, man. This is the eighth game in the core part of the series. Or I suppose the ninth one because there's Zero as well, which is part of the core series.
Yep.
And there's the Gaiden one that came out recently, but... It is very much a next installment in a long-running series. However, I managed to overcome for this one my urge to have a complete run through the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've dived in.
It would be physically impossible.
Yeah.
In the speed I would want to do it, yes.
Yes.
But and I think you would get bored. Because even people that have been playing them over, you know, the course of them coming out, with Gaiden being the little prequel side story thing to this that's set in the same location as all of them, a lot of what you heard from people who played that one, who've played all of them, were like, oh, it's fun, but yeah, I'm really ready to not be in this same city
and
again.
We're talking 20 years basically of games at this
and
point.
This one is very much like, it has a lot of callbacks to the entire series, but it's a sequel to the last one.
So the last one was like a bit of a refresh, like brand new protagonist, had some of the older elements snaking in, but it felt like the real a bit of a new
soft
beginning.
Reboot.
So this is sort of the eighth or ninth overall, but like sort of more like a number two to kind of a second one to this reset.
Yeah,
sort of series.
I mean, they changed the gameplay style to turn-based, which was massive, and like that previous one had a lot of references to Dragon Quest, and that was like the entire, motivation
Your
for
main
making it like that.
The main character, the sort of the in-game justification for why it's turn-based is that he loves Dragon Quest. He played a lot of it in prison, and so he's like, when I'm in fights, I just imagine like I'm in Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
Which just gave them this great license to have like thugs on the street transform into these like kind of big supervillains and stuff like that.
All his mates being like, what is he seeing? What's going on there?
And you're right that 7 was like a soft reset, and this is very much a sequel to that. However, I'm jumping in pretty cold.
Yeah.
I played some 0. In this one, and it's fine.
Right.
Yeah,
like I am enjoying it. It is giving enough context. I'm picking up roughly who these people are and how they relate to each other.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking, oh, I can't get in, as I have done with every other Yakuza game, basically, I am finding it absolutely fine to jump into this one.
Mm. I mean, they're such big characters too that they are. It's so, you know. Yeah, drawn so well that you just kind of get pretty immediately who people are.
Totally, and I'm missing nuance and like not even Easter eggs, like actual direct just continuations and like pleasant stuff to see from the other ones. But it really is doing a pretty good job of having a sentence whenever someone shows up of like, this is how you relate to this person.
Right.
And it does the first 2 hours or so, you're in the city from the first one, and then you go to Hawaii. And from when you get to Hawaii, it's a bit of another like reset where it's like kind of just a whole new story is happening.
Yeah.
I will say I did not expect this at all, you diving in on this one.
Yeah.
And when you dropped the message last night to say that you've been playing it, it honestly made me so happy.
It's making me happy too. I was really not going to, because I was very intimidated by the series, and looked up recommendations and shit, and it's a lot of people going like, definitely at least play 7 and so on, but I'm finding it absolutely fine.
Yeah. I think the stories in these games and the characters are so good that you could, after this, very easily go back to the one before it and still get a lot out of it, because like just seeing the whole origin of all these characters is still going to be interesting, even though you know where they end up.
Exactly. Like, and the first 2 hours of this is telling you what happens at the end of 7 and giving twists about the end of 7 that aren't even in that one and stuff like that. But I don't care. It like, and I normally really do.
Mm. Yeah.
And for some reason, this is absolutely fine. Partly because the tone of this game is so fun and silly, and it's like being dramatic and kind of like a melodrama, or like very high emotion, very serious characters at points, but it's trying to be fun so much the whole way through, and is very consciously making sure that you're not completely lost.
Yeah.
You can pick everything up with context and shit. Like, oh, that person is obviously the big boss from the other game or whatever, and it's totally fine.
It does such a good job of walking this line between, like, really sweet sentiment with how much Ichiban just loves his pals. He just loves having friends. It'll be really silly and really cartoony, like you know, there's like a side thing that is just basically Pokemon, but instead of little monsters, they're guys.
They've got guns.
They're just guys that you found on the street and co-opted into like fighting for you in battles.
Hey, Kremens.
It's like, it's all silly stuff like that, but then it's this like high melodrama, like tense crime saga stuff, and it kind of manages to do all those things often simultaneously without sort of undermining any of the other parts of it.
Right. And I think that the previous ones, like 6 and or 0 and earlier, they weren't as silly. Like
no.
they were famous for having a lot of mini games and like little things, side things you can do, and like
a lot of them were silly, the side
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's just the main character, right? It's the fact that Ichiban is a goofball. He's more of a dummy than the other protagonists were a lot more kind of self-serious, and I think they maybe brought him in to just kind of give themselves a bit of an excuse to have the writing and the story and the characters kind of like match up to how silly the fact was that you were, you know, killing people and then going go-karting immediately after.
But I do think that has that lack of tone, that light tone, that lightheartedness did keep people away who were like had friends be like, you've got to play the Yakuza games, you've got to play them, and then they would play 4 or whatever and be like, this is just so much to wade through, the story is so convoluted, and it didn't have that accessibility that the past two have. And this,
right.
I think these two specifically are just great entry points.
Maybe so. Because like looking at the other ones with interest from the periphery throughout, Kiryu, my understanding is, was a lot more of a straight man kind of role when stuff was silly, where he'd be like, what's this guy's problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Ichiban is the problem
a
lot of the time. But anyway, in a fun way, and all the characters are so well defined that you pick up straight away. It's like tuning into a sitcom in season 7.
Yeah, they're very archetypical, right? Yeah.
But in like not in a poorly written Broadway, in just a way where they have such a character to them that it's quite quick when before you're like, all right,
yeah,
here we go, this guy's fun.
Yeah,
because those first few hours, and it's a little sloggy in a way, like it's really taking its time setting things up.
You need you really need to be braced for something that's classic with a lot of JRPGs, but like this series in particular.
Yeah,
if you're going in that first day that you're playing it, you really can just sit on the couch with your cup of coffee because you're not going to be grabbing the controller too much. You're kind of watching a lot of stuff, which in a lot of other things I would find tedious. But again, like the story stuff that it's throwing at you in this is like so engaging that I just kind of never find myself minding. Where in other games, I'd be like, just get me in there. Let me start playing it.
Because it's hours wise, it's quite a long time before you're even in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I've only just gotten up to that bit. I haven't played that much of it.
Yeah.
Which again is the cool thing about it following on from the one before. I really like that it assumes that you're a fan of the one before it. So it's giving you this, it's knowing that it's taking you at a completely new locale, but it's like, we'll give you a little refresher. We'll give you a little slice of the old setting before we kind of jet you off.
Which doubles as a very effective setup for me coming in for the first
little
time.
Tutorial,
too.
Yeah.
And that's what it's doing through a lot of that. When you're actually playing it, it's taking you through an easy dungeon at some point to show you how this stuff works. And the way that stuff works, the like main portion of the gameplay, and like I say, I haven't gotten up to all the heaps of side stuff and whatever that is in the proper thick of the game.
Mm.
But the core stuff that you're introduced to in those first like maybe 4 hours that I played, the primary things are running around.
Yes.
The place.
Running around a beautiful looking, like the setting from the old game and then Hawaii. It's running so well on my PC. It looks great. This team are so good at, like, they're one of the few teams that brings out a game day one and, you know, basically no issues. Like, doing a lot of different, like, mechanical stuff kind of going on in the background. No bugs, no hitching.
A lot of detail every sort of shop front and everything that you're running past. All of the background little objects. Like, I was really impressed by there's, like, a gross kind of river across the town in the first little bit, and there's just little bits of rubbish floating around in it that look fucking awesome. Stuff like that it's not like the highest fidelity. A lot of it is like fairly simple looking or whatever, but it's done really well with detail and then a lot of the faces of characters are really good. They carry a lot of emotion and like look like human faces.
The main ones are great. They do start to bring in some guys that just kind of pop up for 5 seconds in little side stuff where you go, oh, that's noticeably, but that's only because it's like the main ones are so good.
With your core people who you're, and a lot of which you're meeting early on, I suppose, because it's trying to do in sections like, well, A, there's this dramatic stuff about like family and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
they're selling it really well.
Yeah.
These faces in those cutscenes, but then also are selling the comedy really well. Because, like, Ichiban will do a fair bit of, like, what? Like, the big... But a lot of other people are really deadpan delivering stuff. But it's crazy that it looks deadpan rather than robotic to me.
Yeah.
Like, your mates, whose names I forget.
Nanba. And Adachi.
Adachi. Him especially, I think, is really
Adachi funny. Adachi is my favorite. If you're liking Adachi, that alone is worth playing the one before. Ex-cop, and there's a sequence early on where Ichiban is asking someone out on a date, and Namba and Adachi giving him advice on what to do on the date, and it's just, it's this absurd sequence that doesn't teach you any gameplay.
And it's like 2 hours long, and it's right at the start of the game, and the whole time it's like, I should be like bored because but it's so funny.
It's just for fun. Like, it's literally just put in there because it is a fun thing to do.
And it does a good job for me of setting up these characters because it's your core kind of cast and them like coaching you through stuff, but like also they're naive. I love that this core cast, who I assume are going to be the core cast for the whole game, are like these. Basically, you're all a bunch of unemployed guys over 40.
Yep.
And they feel it and they're losers in this way.
The start of the
Not
one
that
before
you're innately a loser, but you know what I mean. Like, these guys kind
of the start
are.
Of the one before it is you're literally homeless and your little base is a homeless little camp by the river.
I'm not loving the tone of the jokes about that stuff. That which is a fair bit early on, but it's just, like it's tongue in cheek and it's in good fun or whatever. And I don't think it's ill intentioned in a way, but also it is in the effect of it in some ways where it's like
That's interesting because it is. It's definitely present in the previous game, that tone and that level of mocking. Mm. But you also, like Tommy says, you kind of live in this homeless camp for a while and you're part of it.
They become your friends and
So like I felt probably weirder about it in the previous game.
Right.
Being like, is this a cultural thing where it's, you know, whatever. But now I'm like, oh, but it's okay because they're all mates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which still may not justify it.
But. I'm not jumping on any brigade. I'm drinking the Molotov cocktails. I've got no right.
I love the tone of just how much he loves his friends. Like at the conclusion of the, I remember getting kind of tearing up at the end of the first one or the one before this, of just like how it ends and it's like him being like, I've made some, boy, we really went through a crazy adventure, didn't we? And I've made some friends for life. And now just like seeing him back with his boys, just palling around. And because, in the last year we've had two of these games come out. There was the guide and the kind of prequel thing featuring Kiryu, and Ishin, which is the remake. And neither of those, I had a decent enough time for a few hours with both of them, but neither of them really grabbed me. And realizing when you go into this, it's because they were good. They served a purpose, but they were very much side things. And so being back into one that is just like the full AAA, this is the mainline one that's got all the polish to it. Yes. Like immediately this is just like a real step above both of those.
Even early on, this is one of those games that just has a spark to it.
Yeah.
There is just some sort of heart beneath all of this that's a lot of fun.
The little title sequence that comes in half an hour in where he's like walking down the street with the jazzy music playing with credits coming up.
So, one big portion of the game is walking around and doing all this story stuff and doing a lot of reading of characters. Most of the stuff isn't voiced. I'm playing it with the Japanese voices. A lot of which isn't subtitled, which is annoying. Like the more side stuff, like all the main stuff is obviously, but like your party will have a lot of like in combat lines.
Oh, they chat in combat and you don't get it. Yeah. And like on the victory screens and stuff, you don't get any of that.
And there's people as you're running around sort of saying stuff on the street, and some of that has captions above and some doesn't.
Yeah.
There's like some podcasts you can listen to, like early on, it shows you about side quests. And this woman's like, by the way, I host a podcast. And then Ichiban's like, oh, yuck. Not really, but it should be.
I thought I was a loser.
But then those don't have any subtitles. You can listen to them. You've got like a little app on your phone. But
Think it is one of those things that is definitely worth engaging with it with the Japanese voice acting because it is really good. And also a big what they do really well in these games, and it's a bigger part in this than I assume any of the others, having not played any all of them, is the way the Japanese people interact with English speakers is always very funny.
Oh, sure.
And especially going to Hawaii, you then get people talking English where you've got Ichiban being like, what the fuck is this idiot saying?
Yeah, I'm not going to change it, and I want to play it this way because it just is more the way the game is made. But
you just end up missing.
It's a shame that there's some stuff that you can't.
Because you have like little
and
party.
And also for like accessibility reasons, like, fuck you, write a subtitle for it.
Yeah, it's, I guess when there's so much going on, because you also have like party conversations that happen as you're walking around that will show up, they'll be voiced, but they also kind of show up as little text things on the side of the screen, which is sort of like if you're walking around trying to navigate where you're going, and but you're also trying to kind of like keep on top of this conversation on the side of the screen, it just ends up all, but you just kind of do lose that thing of like, it being in the language that you speak natively, where it's like Red Dead, where you can, you know, be on the horse and carriage and just be listening to this happen. As
I hadn't noticed only a minorish thing.
I had not noticed a lack of subtitles.
Right.
Like, yeah, I believe you. But
I hadn't, but I hadn't chucked on the podcasts is the
not done that. But everything
and it's
else,
only this, the like small comments, like when you're leveling up and stuff, like that stuff just doesn't get subtitles.
Yeah, in combat when they're when they're saying stuff, you know, like when they'll. When they'll land an attack or whatever.
When they say stuff like, now I can't tell you what they say because, you know, it's all in Japanese.
Sayonara.
Which I assume that it's in English if you play. There are English voices as an option.
There was one, there was something I loved in the previous one that I haven't seen them do yet is that when you would like when you would heal someone in combat, like when you would give them an item to, you know, restore their health. They like Ichiban in English would go thank you, which he doesn't do this time around. He just does he says it in Japanese, which I like that for some reason he goes, I'll throw this out in English.
There's a fair bit of it, but it's also minor stuff.
But running around
one bit with and all your story and stuff, and then you've got your combat, which is like this very cool real time slash turn based sort of, mainly turn based sort of real time. Physical fighting combat that just gives you spells and shit too and doesn't care that it's stupid. Like you will be in a room, a little arena or whatever, where you're fighting some like jazzed up versions of your real world people enemies.
Which again, they weirdly, I kind of thought they might reiterate that in this one because they do, like you're saying, Adam, they do such a good job of like, you know, making it all sort of broad enough strokes that you can pick up who people are. But they're so explicit about his love of Dragon Quest being the reason that he sees the combat in this way. And they sort of don't really bring that up in this as like
a
prime.
Yeah,
they do.
They do. They specifically do the thing that I said before of like, he's seeing something different to what we're seeing.
They talk about his like crazy imagination.
Yeah.
And he mentions Dragon Quest at one point.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I guess I had the subtitles turned off.
And I'm picking up on these things because it's my first time interacting with them too.
Yeah. You're looking for the explanation.
It's not spending long on them, but it's enough for me to be like, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not lost with any of that. But then, it'll be like this group of enemies who you can do regular just a punch attack with. It'll give you more or less damage based on your proximity to the person.
Is that new?
It is. So the first one, I liked this about it, but this was a thing that some people had a little, not even just like the shift from it being real-time combat to turn-based, but it was like very classic turn-based combat. Like not really too many wrinkles to it. If you've played a JRPG before, it was like pick your attack, either just a straight-up attack or a spell or whatever.
The enemies are over there. We're over here.
We're over here. You could move around, but it was just more, it was just for show. Like, it didn't really alter. And the difference in this one is you have, like, when it's your character's turn, you've got a little circle
around
you where you can position yourself and you can, you deal more damage for proximity. You also will get, like, a little arrow behind the enemy showing you kind of where they're going to go if you belt them down.
Yeah,
and you
some
can
attacks will have like a line that you'll travel down and get multiple, or like an area of effect. If you're standing near a weapon, like a chair or a fire hydrant or whatever, you'll pick that up and do extra damage with that if you do an attack.
So that's the big difference in this one is that you're...
You can move
around. Yeah, you've
a bit,
got your placement actually like really does matter and really lend you a whole new avenue of strategy, and that was not really in the first one at all.
It does seem to be fairly minor differences to the like amount of damage that you're doing, at least at this point where all the numbers are quite low. It doesn't seem to be enormous, but it is a factor. Same as you can do like the Paper Mario, push the button to block a bit of damage.
Yes.
You time it right when you're getting attacked.
And your
perfect block.
Yeah, and your specials will they're like button. They're input based as well.
Right, yeah, you'll get like a you mash square and you'll do more damage.
I'm finding it is the placement stuff is helpful because you have to kind of, it does give you this element of timing to it because the enemies are, they're kind of like moving around as well. So if you've got like a good line where you go, I can hit him and then he's going to like fall back into him and damage him as well.
Yeah.
You have to act on it pretty quickly because he'll sort of end up scuttling away. Yeah. So you, and then sometimes you're looking and you're flanked and you go, okay, well, I can't really, because yeah, some of your special attacks travel in a line, some don't. So it means that if you don't have someone like placed directly behind, then you may as well just focus on just a regular attack that's going to do a lot of damage or a weapon attack. You can also, if you knock someone back into someone on your team, they'll do a follow-up attack, which I think all that stuff gets expanded on as you do the like social link bond stuff with the people in your team.
And I'm sure this stuff, as you get more and more abilities, as you level up, becomes more intricate because you've got more options.
Yeah, and it's still, I think I'm just playing on normal. And it's still very, very easy, especially coming from the previous one. It's like, all of that combat stuff is very like muscle memory. Like it's all very, very similar. And like the skill like spells are all the same, I think, for the characters that you had last time.
Yeah. You can like whack L2 and it'll just go automatically.
Oh yeah.
Turn on just to go for it mode. Yeah.
But I do, I like the positioning stuff just because there's a lot of random encounters. You can run away from, like you can run around the cone of vision of the sort of people out in the world, but I like that stuff because like it just can make the battle a bit faster.
It just makes it so much different to the first one. It's so much more satisfying. Like when you line up
automatically too. Yeah. Really. Like it's not something where you're having to really think about your placement, like more like Baldur's Gate or whatever, like an actual kind of tactical game like that.
Yeah.
You're just sort of automatically moving closer towards someone, and so it is a good middle ground between that, like. Earlier Yakuza stuff of this is a brawling fighting game versus the turn-based stuff from the last one. It does a cool halfway between those two. Much more of the turn-based JRPG type combat.
Right.
Yeah.
As I understand it, it ramps up more and more too. Like even just in a fight I was doing the other day, I was able to hit someone onto the road and then they got hit by a car that was coming past and like just wiped them out immediately.
Cool.
And as I understand it, there's bits on boats where you can knock people overboard and they'll get eaten by a shark and all that kind of stuff. So it just, again, like from it, a lot of the stuff mechanically is the same as the previous one, but just having that just feels like it gives it just a bit more, like you're just doing a little bit more in these, like I'm not really dodging any random encounters because I'm still, even if they are, you know, sort of underpowered compared to me, just the fun of like lining it up and experimenting with your, you know, your knockbacks and your weapons that you can pick up. I'm finding all of that so satisfying and just like the presentation of the battles is so good.
Yeah,
like,
it's really cool.
The feeling of just slamming someone with a park bench is just, it's so satisfying. It's so like,
it's really fast. It's like, I'm not getting the thing, and I'm extremely early on, but like something like a Persona 5 or whatever, where you get to a point in that where the small encounters, you just go into them knowing exactly what's going to happen. You know which one of these is rock and which one's paper and which one's scissors, and it's just going through the motions. This doesn't feel like it will necessarily get to that same point because it's all a little bit more amorphous and moving around, and there's a bit more physical stuff going on to keep you on your toes.
If it's anything like the previous one, it did start to like really,
I was gonna say,
ratchet
yeah,
up at a certain point. So you
it's
had
easy
to get
at the start, but it's and there is a portion in the previous game that it is like an arena, you know, battle mode.
Oh, they love that.
Which it's a great like way to test out the limits of that, you know, combat mechanic or combat mechanics. And I am looking forward to that because running around the world, a couple of fucking brawlers on the street, take them out. But putting like and exploring the intricacies of this combat and the abilities you get later on and the elemental stuff and, you know, the weaknesses and strengths is great to do in like a arena combat thing where they're yep. chucking these weird guys with their own abilities at you. And
because you've got your rank, but you're like leveling up, but you've also got your class yeah. is leveling up. And I think I'm 9 hours in and I haven't gotten up to this yet, but you can at a certain point change jobs. So you go in the first one, you go to the place where he's working at the start
right.
is like where you go in the first one to like change your class. So you Hello go like, work. Hey, yes. I want a new job as a construction worker. And then all of a sudden you have like a whole different range of attacks.
Yeah.
Whole different range of like abilities. It changes your health. It changes all of that stuff.
That's very Final Fantasy. Like yeah. having new jobs even.
Changes their appearance in battles, which is really fun. So I'm looking forward to getting up to that point because I understand that there's, yeah, a whole bunch of different right. like kooky. That's where they really start to stretch out with the, and just, yeah, the themes of the characters and their attacks. So like one of you guys in your party is a taxi driver.
Mm-hmm.
So one of his attacks is rigging up a car battery and electrocuting someone with it. And then you eventually unlock a sort of like a complementary attack to that, which is like a giving someone a soap down. So like he chucks a bucket of soapy water on them, which then makes them susceptible to the electricity damage as a follow-up.
Right, right.
It's all a fun type of silly too that is like pretty much exactly walking the line between so silly that you're like, this is a joke game versus mm-hmm. like, this is a game with jokes in it.
It really right, feels like sense. It does feel kind of like a Mario game in the sense that like, you can tell that there were just no wrong answers for the whiteboard. You know, like the planning stage would have been so fun. Like people yeah. can come in and just throw any idea out and it's going to be at least in consideration.
Yeah.
Like there's no idea too stupid for this game. Because once you, I mean, yeah, you're right in the ease of it, but then once you get into Hawaii and it kind of opens up and you're kind of walking down the streets, you like you can go into the areas where you'll see sort of slightly higher ranked people, and there's these I really like this wasn't in the first one, there's these people that are around that have like a little crown above them,
yes,
and they're enemies that once you fight them they're gone from that area and they're blocking a part of town that like they're sort of like the king of that area,
right.
So
yeah,
and you'll go up to one of them and they'll be like, you know, level 25, you know, you can sort of challenge them just whenever you want.
Well, yeah, that the first one of those that I saw, which was like in a parking garage in Hawaii, I went up and beat first go. So
yeah.
I don't know, and like I have been doing every random encounter, like I'm enjoying the combat, but, and I guess I do remember a lot of the like, the combat from the previous game and the ways to sort of, you know, fuck around with people. But yeah, that was fun and having those challenges there is good.
I did the same thing as you, beat him first go, and then I saw another one and I was like, oh, I'm just going to take these guys on whenever I see him. And I think at the time I was like level 12 and he was level 25. Mm. And I went, oh.
Well, and you can tell immediately almost that this is like a massive game.
Yes.
That yeah. there's going to be a lot of progression.
Because, yeah, again, in the whole thing of the pacing of it in the start, it does that introductory section, which is about 3 hours, and then it takes you to Hawaii, and it almost like restarts again. Because then once yeah. you get to Hawaii, it's very slow again with, like, you know, what happens to Ichiban when he gets there. And a lot of the side stuff that is optional in this, it sort of threads you through in the main story and kind of mm-hmm. makes you do. So there's pretty early on when you get to Hawaii, you get on Tinder, which is like a whole sub mini game thing you can do where you have to like make a profile and try and match with people and
right.
get pictures from them, which mm-hmm. is all a little weird. But again, in the tone of the overall thing is like, whatever. There's like a little, the crazy taxi little mini game that yep. they'd promoted is in there.
There's just an ad for Uber Eats. Real early on.
Oh, really?
It's just a big Uber
Actual
Eats
Uber
sign.
Eats?
And then you're working for Crazy Eats later,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yes.
But there's a big Uber Eats sign.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
In Japan.
Yeah, right. You get a Segway that you can ride around on.
I haven't got the Segway yet.
You've got your little, yeah, you've got
you're
your...
You're the fucking Segway.
Yeah. yeah. You've got your little Pokemon yep. League thing. You've got darts.
Like an Animal Crossing.
You've got an
town
Animal Crossing
you get
eventually.
At some point, right?
Yeah, which yes, yeah, some people who have had access to it, but I guess you know reviewers and stuff have said like, yeah, once I got to that, I spent 15 hours just playing that.
There's a lot of expensive shit looking DLC for this game.
yeah,
already like straight up in the shop of like lots of costumes or just like bonuses like items,
level up
and
items
packs
and stuff.
And
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, right.
I don't like all of that stuff. be in there. The look of it. I mean, you can ignore a lot of it, but it's just like
I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was the same with the first one, and it just is. There's so much in the base game, and they do this with Persona too. It's like, you know, they'll
Resident most Evil 4 JRPGs remake has
have this. Like a buy your items to level up, and it's. Yeah, it's really easy to ignore.
It's not massive. The New Game Plus thing is something that most games haven't put that behind it.
Yeah,
before,
yeah.
And it's like a $38 pack or something. That you've got to.
Which seems strange. But what is there for just your base game is like so polished. There's so much in it. It just really has that thing of like, I just don't want to stop playing it. Like, it's so enthralling. It's so fun. It is a lot of the same. It's like, walk over here. Every sort of story beat is like, let's go talk to this guy. And then, oh, who are these ruffians that have showed up? We'd better kick their asses.
I like that the whole sort of instigating thing, like, it's got a pretty good... I mean, as much as some parts are a little maybe like if you were going to analyze them, you would say they're tone deaf or whatever. Some parts of it are very on the money with like the instigating event that sort of makes things go wrong is like a VTuber who runs a call out channel. And you get called out and like it, and the story kind of goes from there. But like it exists in the real world in a cool way, even though it's so silly, where a lot of it is like, yeah, man, then COVID happened and this went wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the writing specifically in these games of like anytime they find out like the big, big plot that the Yakuza or the government are up to are always like so well done. Yeah. They're always like, oh yeah, that's a really great evil person scheme.
Yeah.
And I just got up to a big one in this of like what's going on behind the walls of the big organization that's in this in Hawaii is like, yeah, that's a great plot.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing more of it. It is one of the three massive RPGs that are out in February.
Yeah.
I guess it's not February yet, but because Persona 3 is this Friday as well, and then Final Fantasy's later in the month.
That's insane. Would you like to hear some patron opinions?
Sure, yeah. I would. Let's get some early... Because again, like, even if you've played it for 20 hours at this point or whatever,
yeah, that's still
it's a big game.
I'm one at, fifth of it. Or yeah, something, I got to, I think 9 hours. I just finished, like, I guess basically the first big dungeon of Hawaii, and it really only feels now like it's okay. We're like fully in now.
Right.
You can sort of now go do whatever you want.
But it's doing all that stuff well. It's not tedious.
Yeah,
it is kind of slow, like I guess. But it is engaging and. Again, fine for first timers in my
and
opinion.
And also, as slow as it is, I think it's also the snappiest one of the ones that I've played.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair, yeah. Wade says, Like a Dragon has been outstanding so far and just like the last one, ridiculous. My wife, while sitting next to me during chapter one, was laughing out loud at the first date scene and spoiler alert, I'm not going to read the rest. Craig says...
I also laughed out loud a couple of times during all the date setup stuff.
It's so good.
There's a really good line in that of like what he reckons you should do when you're meeting someone on a date that is like so not gaggy. It's just a really funny thing.
Yeah.
There's a bit where when you meet Kiryu for the first time and he's like, you look so different. And then he takes his glasses off and he goes... Oh my God.
He's like Superman. That's a real thing. Craig says Infinite Wealth improves on the previous game in so many ways. Pacing issues do hold it back a little bit, however. Interesting. Could see myself playing this for months. There's so much to do. Tim says it's so wonderfully stupid in all the best ways. Why does everyone in Hawaii speak Japanese? Yeah, I was gonna bring this up.
Yeah, good point.
So many things you can jump on the recent Napoleon movie forums.
Yeah,
there's a lot of
you meet this cop early on who's like a white guy who's meant to be this like shithead American cop, like kind of hates foreigners, and he speaks absolute like he just at a certain point just switches into talking like perfect Japanese.
I wonder what that stuff's like in the English voiceover too. Like, I'd be interested to hear that stuff, but I don't really want to play it with that.
Reason.
Yeah, it says, how does Kasuga get his cell phone back after ending up naked on the beach? Who cares? Tim is up to the island mini game. He says it's so much fun. I've completely stopped playing the story for now. Exactly the game I was hoping for. A+.
By the way, I just want to say quickly, speaking of that naked on the beach thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first like reveal trailer of it, which it, in full Austin Powers mode, which I had kind of always assumed was something that they had made just to announce the game, mm-hmm. because of how just like kind of stupid it was, of right. just like, oh yeah, is in a new location. And I was thrilled to realize that that's in the game and is part of the story and completely justified.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, Elliot says, I like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, but I don't love a Dragon Infinite Wealth. Ooh. Interesting.
I think there's some bits of it that like, I'm really enjoying it, but I don't think it controls particularly well.
Mm.
I think the movement feels sloppy and like a bit loose.
It does have that thing that is, I know what you mean, like when you're walking around, that thing that some games do where they've wanted it to feel very true to life. So if you stop very abruptly, he kind of like, you know, he kind of comes to a bit of a staggering stop, which does make it feel, very loose. It feels
a bit awkward. And like, I kind of agree with some of the pacing stuff. Even though I'm enjoying it, I don't think it's like well laid out.
Yeah, Brandon says, this is my first Like a Dragon game, having a good time with it. It does seem to be just a lot of cutscenes with minimal input in what I've played so far, but it also sounds like that's just part of the series.
Yeah, and like, what, I like Metal Gear Solid 4.
Right. And yes, the more you like the cutscenes, the less you'll care that there's a lot of cutscenes, I guess.
Totally.
As well.
It's a lot more of like an academic concern than actually.
Right.
It is such a funny like split where it really, holds your hand, is paced very slowly in the beginning, but then once it lets you go, it's like, not only can you do whatever you want now, you can do literally anything. You can go to the bank, you can you can go to an arcade and play Sega Pro Bass Fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it once it's letting you do whatever you want in the game, there's so much like extra side stuff that you can go and do.
Yeah, cool.
And that plot, I will say as well, I'm fully on board.
Me too.
I'm liking it.
It's mysterious. Yeah. It's engaging. It's got me hooked in, like the previous game did as well. And I do think that they are getting better as they go along. I've dabbled in some of the earlier ones.
I just love your little crew trying to unravel a mystery. And there's a lot. There's a lot of like sitting down at the end of a day and going like, right, let's go over what we know so far.
What was that? There's like a hook early on in the story that I won't say, even though it's early on, but it's like hours in, that when it was presented, I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. And there's a few things like that going through it. Do we have any thoughts from patrons about Tekken 8 as well?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, let's have them in a minute, because first of all, I want to lead the charge because I've been playing another fighting game.
Yeah.
But very different, more traditional fighting game called Tekken 8.
Your granddaddy's fighting game.
Yeah, this is your granddaddy's fighting game. But with some similarities too. So you used to play a bit of Tekken back in the day.
I've played, I think, everyone up to 7.
Cool.
Yes.
Well, maybe you would understand more of the plot in the story mode of Tekken 8. I doubt it. Tekken 8's great fun. I like a fighting game, and damn it if this ain't one. It looks fantastic right off the bat. It's big and chunky and colorful and fast. Looks really, really good. A big roster of characters for this one. There's 32 characters right up front. It's a lot of different just folks.
Yep.
You know, people standing there.
Yeah. But they're not all panda bears.
One of them is like, her whole thing is like, I love coffee.
Hell,
I don't think they've really...
I mean, it's probably the most I would relate to a Tekken character.
She like, I think her, I can't remember what it is, but her like family owns a coffee farm or something, and she's like big into coffee. But so all of her like, you know, little quips before a match is like, wake up and smell the coffee or whatever.
It's nice. Time for a double shot.
She's the coffee one.
Nice.
And yeah, that is two of them are bears. There's a bunch of really good characters. A lot of them play interestingly differently, even though they are all just sort of people doing punches and kicks. Mm-hmm. Your controls are to corresponding to your limbs is the traditional Tekken thing. So you've got a left arm, a right arm, and then guess what? Left leg, right leg.
Okay, what about that third leg?
Well, there is kind of a third leg mode now.
Okay.
If you just whap L1, it all changes, as has been the fighting game thing for the last few iterations of the big ones. There's like a simplified controls mode where I haven't used it as much. So to my recollection, it is like your square button is sort of your like starting special attack move things. So this is like your, like what would be right and kick or whatever, like a core attack.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
To then move on to triangle, which is attacks that will work well as like air combo juggling things. Mm-hmm. And then the other two buttons do other stuff too. I don't really remember how that one works. I haven't used it as much. But it seems cool in the same way that the Street Fighter one did. Where it's
bit
like
of a shorthand.
Yeah, really easy way to get you into like the
Smash Brothers mode.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good way of putting it, I suppose.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I disagree.
Don't know about, I suppose, on the end there, but yeah.
You've got your core fighting game stuff. Guess what? You can go online and fight multiplayer.
Whoa.
Fights against people.
Fucking hell.
And that seems to work well enough for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know tons about the ins and outs of rollback frames and all of that shit that goes into fighting games.
Yep, that very intense and detailed stuff.
As I have experienced it, it has worked fine for my level of ability.
Cool.
Which is enough for me. It like will tell you if people are on a Wi-Fi connection or wired and stuff like that to give you the option to like, do you want to fight this person? And if you don't, because you're only fighting a specific, you know, like
right. That's good.
Yeah, it's got cross-play and shit too, so mm-hmm. your all platforms are all together. And the core of all that stuff, the main just base of this is what a fighting game is. It seems great.
Cool.
I've enjoyed the different characters. I've given a go. I was able to get going with Jin again pretty quick.
Oh, nice.
And feel like I was playing Tekken. All of that stuff's great to me. You've got three different main single player modes on top.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Arcade Quest.
Okay.
Which is a very... So actually, I'm going to go in the other direction. You've got like a story campaign mode, which is like the Mortal Kombat games of late that has a bunch of cutscenes tying together excuses to fight.
Yep.
The excuses they find to fight are relatively often in this, let's spar.
Right.
It's like your friend, there's just a while where you're hanging out with your teammates or whatever, so you're fighting. But the overall story is the continuing like...
just quickly, speaking of, there is something very funny about Like a Dragon where it does make Hawaii look like hell on earth, where you can't go more than half a block without someone going, what are you looking at, dumbass?
I like that a lot of the... It finds in Like a Dragon 2 like things to call them instead of being able to say like, you know, lizard or dragon or wolf or whatever that you'd be fighting. It'll just be like, asshole.
Yeah.
Threatening man.
Yeah. So, this story mode in Tekken is like this big, only like 3 hours ish long or something, but big production wise sort of conclusion ish chapter of the like the Mishimas keep fighting each other story that has been kind of the main story of the Tekken games throughout. Brian Cox summed it up what that is.
Oh yeah.
Like Heihachi throws Kazuya off of a cliff, then vice versa, then Jin gets born, etc.
Yes. It's all based around the Iron Fist tournament.
For some reason, it is.
Yeah.
In this one, like, so Jin has been evil in the past and took over the Mishima Zaibatsu.
Yes.
Which caused Kazuya to start the G Corporation.
Oh, the G Corp.
Now the G Corporation is sort of the big dangerous one. Mm. And he's got the devil gene, Kazuya Mishima.
Yeah.
Okay. So he is like taking over the world. And his plan is, I'm going to make... we're going to do the King of Iron Fist tournament. Representatives from each part of the world are going to compete. Whoever wins, I'll treat that country the best.
Wow.
All the others, fuck off.
That's all right.
That's how the Olympics should work.
Yeah, it's
kind of, yeah, he's doing the big Olympics.
If your country wins, no tax.
Yeah.
No tax for
That's
4 years.
That's basically his thing. He's like, only strength matters, so fuck all y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're fighting against that with you and your like... You're with the UN, but in this it stands for something different.
Mm.
And it's like headed by this French guy. Everyone just speaks their native language, but they all understand each other.
Beautiful.
Which isn't it?
Mm.
What a lovely vision for the world.
Yeah.
That's
the one good thing about that AI thing. Apparently you can like live translate and stuff.
All your babblefish stuff. Yeah.
Mm.
The one good thing. the story is fucking nonsense.
Yeah.
It is badly written and it is kids playing with action figures level of in depth. Like it makes no sense. It has characters doing bullshit things for no reason and it sucks. And I really had a fun time with it.
Yeah. That is my memory of Seven as well.
It's so nothing.
Yep.
But also, it's nothing in such a fun way that it's like watching this shit anime from years ago or whatever.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
It knows that it's being dumb.
Kind of, right. But yeah. It doesn't in enough of a way to let you be like...
right. It's not. Right. Yeah, it's not being ironic. It's being earnest, I think.
It's trying to earn some emotional payoffs and stuff, but it doesn't. But in a way that I don't want to analyze because I also enjoy it.
It's a lot of like one of the guys, whoever you're being at the moment is like, all right, I'm here in this building. Wow, what's going on? And then a bunch of soldiers burst in. And then after the soldiers, another big guy comes in and he's like, well, let's fight.
Some people will just...
Let's fight. Them's fighting words.
Some people will run up to where you are and it's like, what are you doing here? But no one asks that of them.
Yeah,
they're just there.
Yeah.
But it's fun. And it's like 3 hours long and the cutscenes look fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's just like... enough to be like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of bits in it where it's like, oh, that's a cool idea. And that's enjoyable enough. Then you've got your traditional Tekken play five fights as this character, get an ending cutscene type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's 32 of those to go through, which
is
cool.
Baby.
And, you know.
You're unlocking stuff?
Yeah, you're unlocking like outfits and fight money and like little banners to decorate your online profile.
Right.
And stuff
okay.
Like that. But you're not, and like you unlock those cutscenes at the end.
Yep.
So then the third mode, which is kind of the coolest thing to me, it's fun that it has this story in it that has taken all the Tekken lore,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, and doing something with that and making this conclusion to the family saga that it's been doing. Then the other story in it is set in the real world where the game Tekken 8 just came out and everyone is playing it in the arcade. And that one's also pretty fun.
Okay.
You're making like a little guy and they're like, Tekken 8's out, everyone. Let's play Tekken 8. And you're going to different arcades and there's like internal politics in those arcades where one guy comes by and he's like, I came here looking for Tekken players, but you idiots fucking suck at this game. Come see me when you're good at it.
I mean, this does sound very Yakuza because you can just go into an arcade and play Virtual Fighter.
This is that. And and there's other people playing other like Namco games and mm-hmm. the like arcade games in there.
Fuck yeah.
So you go around and you fight people at Tekken.
Nice.
And work your way up the Tekken ranks until you're playing, you know, international
a
level
great
Tekken
player.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is cool.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it is. I haven't spent that much time doing it. It doesn't seem like as long as like the Street Fighter one was, for example.
Right.
But it's a fun sort of a spread of single player things to do that there's enough in there that if you were just going to play that stuff, I think this is cool.
Right.
But then the multiplayer stuff seems great. You can customize your characters really heavily and, you know, dress them up in a whole bunch of different outfits and whatever. And then you can buy a lot of extra outfits too if you want to
mm-hmm.
give them
mm-hmm.
Too much money. They're like Ultimate Edition comes with 32 t-shirts that have old Tekken memes on them, basically.
Oh, okay.
Like it's that face from Kazuya at cutscene at the end of 1 or 2 where he's like, doing
mm-hmm.
like the weird grin, stuff like that. And let me tell you, I got to be fucking careful because some of them are pretty cool.
Okay.
I like it.
I will play this at some point. There's too many games coming out to literally afford. But I've always been a fan of Tekken, and for me, it is the default fighting game. That
sure,
like, and because like Street Fighter, the controls change at a certain point, and just like having that be square is right punch or left punch, triangles the other. You know,
Tekken was the big one in the PS1 days too. Mm. Like Tekken was the main PS1 fighter at a point there.
Yes,
and deservedly so. Like it's really cool, and having within the last year, Street Fighter 6, Mortal Kombat 1 and this Tekken 8, it's just sick that I think Mortal Kombat was probably maybe the weakest out of the three, I guess.
Oh, right.
But there are good versions of each of like the traditionally the main fighting games.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, you've echoed the thoughts of patron FTN Chicken.
Yeah, nice.
Good username. Who says exactly that? Considering we only just got new entries in both Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, I really didn't think there was still room for another new fighter to enter the ring.
Oh, God.
Nah, hell yeah.
I don't understand. But I was definitely wrong, and they reckon Tekken 8 feels like the best the franchise has ever been.
It probably is. I didn't play a lot of 7, but like 3 was my one.
Yeah,
I fucking loved 3.
3 was fucking awesome.
And 5 was great too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously more modern and everything, and the online stuff all seems great. Tekken Ball is back.
Oh, sick.
Remember Tekken Ball?
That was in 3, right?
Yeah. I don't think Gon is in this, but they've already announced a couple of the DLC characters, I think, or at least Eddie is like the first one, I believe.
Oh, nice.
Keep you dressed up as Donald Duck?
Not yet.
But keep emailing them. And yeah, just one other comment here on Tekken 8 from Chocolate Coat, who says, Tekken 8 is an almost perfect fighting / Tekken game. Fantastic for former players and does just enough for new folks. As a longtime Tekken player, it checks every box and then some.
Yeah, ooh. I think this is definitely, ooh, they've like nailed it as continuing the Tekken platform.
Because
Tekken 7 was hugely popular.
Right.
And this one has already surpassed all its early things.
It seems like maybe they've set themselves up for like a Mortal Kombat style reboot, maybe?
As the next one?
Yeah.
There are things in this where you could just continue it.
Oh, yeah,
They are positioning some characters as like these people will continue.
Right.
Because like it's weird with Tekken where they kind of have just aged up the characters as they've gone, sort of like Street Fighter did, but in a like different order to the actual numbers.
Right.
But like Paul looks like shit now.
Yeah.
He is getting old.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot.
Yeah. Heihachi, he's like got to be 100.
I mean, he's died twice.
Yeah, true.
And
that's
currently
true, yeah.
He's missing.
Yeah.
And I'm
great.
Sure a DLC pack will explain where he is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's a great week for the number 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn it on its side and you get infinite.
I only just realized that.
Fuck.
Damn.
Yeah.
What a week for you.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I only just realized that that's probably why it's called Infinite Wealth. Is because it's 8.
Turn it on, and the logo is like the infinity on its side.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the infinity is regular.
It's right way up.
Anyway, yes. Tekken Infinity is fun. And if you like Tekken and fighting games, then they've done it.
Yeah. Fuck. That's great. Been a good start to the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot of misses.
Excited for Persona 3 Reload, getting great reviews.
That's out tomorrow.
Never played it back in the day, and looking forward to going in.
Looking
forward to jumping back and forth between two games with quite similar mechanics.
And hey, we'll find out how Suicide Squad is.
I'm really getting my blood pumped up for that next Final Fantasy.
I did say at the very start of this episode that Infinite Wealth may be game of the year, but also that maybe.
There's a few that'll be that we're already talking.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's gonna.
All right, let's wrap it up there for this week.
Why?
Filthycasuals.com.au. We got the Patreon. Get on there.
Oh, yeah.
Get yourself a bonus show every week.
Bonus.
An extra hour of content from us every week in the inbox. Check out Ben's Survivor podcast, Tribe Check. Come and see us at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Yeah, girl.
April the
7th, 14th and 21st.
There you go, at the Cooper's Inn.
Yes.
Get your tickets to that. Get on the YouTube channel. We've got some Lethal Company videos. We've got a Power World video. We've got all sorts of Let's Plays on there. Heaps and heaps and heaps of videos for you to check out. If you've never gone there and done that, I really recommend it.
Yeah.
We will see you next week. Thank you very much for listening. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
I guess you could say I've Tekken a liken the dragon to those games.
Mm. Yeah, wow.
If you had, a problem, you could say that.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.